Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Skimming over the jungles in notorious Zone D, these C-123s of the 309th Air Commando Squadron have a unique assignment, defoliation. The spray materials used are harmless to humans, animals, soil, and water.
Well, they weren't. The chemical was Agent Orange, the herbicide used during the Vietnam War to deforest the land and deprive the Viet Cong of food and the ability to conceal themselves. But as we all know, the toxic chemicals also caused devastating health consequences for millions, the Americans serving in Vietnam and the Vietnamese on the ground. And a legal battle resulted in the biggest settlement in U.S. history. What's not known is that Americans, civilians, working stateside, were also exposed. Among them, the workers at Eglin Air Force Base in Florida. Producer John Kalish tells their story in his new documentary, The Forgotten Civilians of Eglin Air Force Base. It was commissioned by Living Downstream, the environmental justice podcast series from Northern California Public Media. John, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Well, give us the setting for this. You spent time on the base. How were these workers exposed?
These workers were known as range technicians. There were some guys who went out in the test grid and picked up these little cardboard placards that were sprayed and brought it back to a lab so that they could see the results of the test sprays. And there were guys who were, I guess you'd call them cameramen. There were two guys needed to operate these huge 35-millimeter color film cameras that were the size of a refrigerator, and they're perched up on a platform, and they were heavily exposed to the spray.
Yeah, well, let's listen to some of the men that you met decades later, Tommy C. Brown and Clarence Hobbs. They were some of the cameramen you mentioned. And we're also going to hear from Billy McLean, who showed you where the base was dumping the barrels of Agent Orange when they were finished. Let's start with 72-year-old Tommy.
Sometimes it'd be like a mist. But I remember one time we got sprayed and it was like mud. It was like a thin mud. It kind of covered us up. If I seen mist, I would not cut that camera off. I would sit right there on my position until they told me otherwise.
Sometimes we'd have to wipe our forehead running the camera because it get on your forehead bad enough. You're afraid it's going to get in your eyes. They gave us instructions to wipe that camera down and clean it every night. But they never told us anything about wiping ourselves down.
They brought barrels of Agent Orange and dumped them in the head of a creek out there, a steep creek. It'd be 50, 60 feet down there to the bottom. And they just roll these barrels out of pickup trucks. I seen them doing that, and I've been down there and seen the barrels down in the bottom of the creek. And that happened, I don't know how often, but there was many barrels that was put down in there.
Now, keep in mind, Robin, there was not the consciousness we have today about toxic chemicals. Mm-hmm. And there certainly was no warning given by the employer of these civilian employees, a company called Vitro. There was no warning that they were dealing with a product, a chemical product that was contaminated with a highly toxic compound known as dioxin. And they were warned to wash the vans down, but they just didn't put two and two together. And so they didn't think that this stuff was dangerous.
Yeah. And by the way, it's horrible to hear them talking about it, knowing we now know what it was, that it was Agent Orange. But things started to go terribly wrong.
That's right. And not only were they affected, but they believe, and this is certainly something that parallels the claims made by Vietnam veterans exposed to Agent Orange. They believe their wives were affected and that their children were also affected by their exposure to the herbicide.
You visited one family in the documentary. Let's listen.
My daughter, when she was 3 years of age, she just got sick. She just became limp. They finally decided it was her kidneys. She had a kidney disease.
That's Linda Yates, the widow of Jack Yates, who collected the cards on the spray grid, among other tasks at Eglin.
Our daughter was a daddy's girl. When he would come home, she would run out of the house and jump on him and hug him and all, rubbing all over his clothes, just sticky, saturated with Agent Orange. Well, his clothes, I might not wash them for 3 days. What I feel bad about is I let them set till I'd get a big load and wash clothes with the 2 kids, mine, Jack's. I did not know how dangerous that chemical was. When I did get to wash them, you could just stand them up. They were like starched. They were stiff, sticky and stiff.
The notion that they brought home clothes that were tainted with dioxin, a highly toxic byproduct of Agent Orange, and unwittingly exposed their loved ones to it haunts some of the former Eglin workers. Bobby Gunter wonders if his late wife's neurological problems resulted from dioxin exposure, or whether his stepson died at an early age because of it.
He was 6 years old when I worked there at Vitra with the spray machines. He died of leukemia. I'm wondering if I was the cause of it because it was on my clothes when I went home. My clothes was washed with their clothes. My wife washed them, you know. I beat myself up for all these years. Was it the cause of it?
John Kalish, that is heartbreaking.
Yes, and I would point out that the claims that family members suffered miscarriages or birth defects is more controversial than the understanding that the men who were directly exposed are suffering from a variety of medical ailments.
Yeah. What are some of those ailments?
There's a list of presumptive diseases for which Vietnam veterans can win disability benefits relating to Agent Orange exposure. And this list includes leukemia, diabetes, lymphoma, Parkinson's disease, a nervous system disorder, liver dysfunction, variety of cancers, especially soft tissue sarcomas, and a terrible skin rash known as chloracne, which a lot of these men in Florida have had to deal with.
Well, you tell a great story about how a man named Von Jones finally made the connection between the illnesses that these now older civilian workers were having and the chemicals that they'd worked with. What did he tell you about how he started connecting the dots?
Of course, this is many, many years, in fact, decades later, when he was at a clinic getting his regular chemotherapy, and he looks across the hall, and he notices this supervisor from the Air Force base, and that guy was there for cancer and chemotherapy, and they started talking and realized that all these guys they had worked with had either died or were suffering from some of these Agent Orange presumptive diseases.
You know, this was, as you said, decades later. Had they not heard about the huge class action lawsuit by Vietnam vets? You know, the settlement was worth $180 million. In 1984, that was the largest award in American history. You'd think they would have connected the dots sooner.
One of the Eglin civilian workers did tell me that he remembers hearing news coverage of the Agent Orange case, and he turned to his wife and said, "I got drenched with that stuff." But I suppose it just went by a lot of the other men.
Well, finally, they brought in a lawyer who was involved with that Vietnam veterans lawsuit. Tell us about him.
His name is Victor Yannicone, and he's a kind of legendary environmental lawyer who in the late 60s practically single-handedly litigated the ban of DDT. And he brought the Agent Orange class action on behalf of the veterans in 1979. And he is willing to come back and jump in the ring again, so to speak, to represent these civilian workers at Eglin.
Along with a local attorney, Rusty Sanders. Let's listen.
Mr. Yannicone and I, we know what the hell we're doing. But these companies have tremendous resources. They're not going to bow easily. So we need a public interest consortium to help bring these civilians justice. We're confident that if we have our day in court, and when we do, that justice will be served.
John, having done this reporting, are you confident that they'll have their day in court? And will enough of them still be here to have that day in court?
Well, to answer your latter question, I should tell you that 2 weeks after my reporting trip, the last guy I interviewed died from a very serious case of cancer ravaging his body. And I am told that one of the men who we heard in this segment is in very bad shape now. So Some of them may not be around to celebrate. To answer your first question, will they have their day in court? It's unclear because the two lawyers who are willing to bring this clearly do not have the deep pockets it's necessary to go up against these chemical companies that have huge resources to fight this in court. It could be argued that the defendants or the possible defendants, which include the manufacturers of Agent Orange, including Dow and Monsanto, that they and the company that took over Vitro, they're basically waiting for these guys to die. Mm. And so the two lawyers, Sanders and Yannicone, they're looking for a personal injury law firm with deep pockets to come forward and fund this litigation. They can't – they're two relatively small-time solo practitioners. They don't feel that they can do this themselves.
Well, they, as I said, they also need public interest. And you've helped create that. That's John Kalish. We'll link you to his documentary, The Forgotten Civilians of Eglin Air Force Base. And, John, obviously you'll stay on this story.
I will.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.